Welcome to Out of Rotation, volleyball talk for players, coaches, and fans. Presented by the American Volleyball Network. Here's your host, Dan Meskin.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. We got a fun one for you today. On top of bringing back co-host John Klanek, we're going to be talking to one of the most fun players that you could see play in person. I'm talking about Carly Graham, former setter at Rice University, currently playing in the PVF with the Orlando Valkyries. Carly's one of those setters that when I think of her, the absolute best thing she does is set the ball. So if you're an aspiring setter or you're just somebody who admires the game, do yourself a favor and YouTube Carly Graham. Find some highlights from her. Watch the Orlando Valkyries play. She is a really, really fun talent to watch. The cool thing about her story that you're going to hear is that she was a self-described under-recruited student-athlete. So she kind of got looked over by a few bigger, quote-unquote, bigger programs, heard a lot of no's, you know, saw a lot of roadblocks. And I think it's a really cool story, in particular for student-athletes, just to hear what grit and determination will get you. For Carly, you know, she, again, heard some no's. Her recruitment didn't go the way she was hoping or thought that it would. But she didn't let that get in the way of what she was going to accomplish in college. So for her, she ended up becoming a three-time Conference USA Setter of the Year. She was a two-time honorable mention All-American. And, you know, in my eyes, those years she was an honorable mention All-American, I think she was the best setter in the country, if not one of the top two or three. She is just a really fantastic volleyball player that continued to get better, continued to grind, and is enjoying a really, really nice pro career right now. Another unique thing about this episode is this was one of the first times that I brought John Klanek on as our co-host. And one thing you're going to hear is in this episode, we actually recorded this before he took the Purdue University assistant coaching job. So he's going to talk about being at Rice. But again, in the last month, he's since moved on to Purdue. And it's kind of a nice capstone for Carly's career and for John's time at Rice as they kind of reminisce through some of the really cool experiences that they've had together. So I hope you enjoy our conversation. Here she is, Carly Graham.
I wasn't super highly recruited at all. I had communicated with like a few schools, and like I was super excited about those few schools that I was talking with. And it was just like, I think a lot of people, like I know a lot of people came and like watched, you know, whatever volumetrics, you get a little notification that somebody watched your video or clicked your video, and I would be like, yeah, like so excited. Not a lot came from that specifically, like no further interest rather than just like watching the video. And then I was communicating with a few schools, and then just visited Rice, and it was like that instant gut feeling that I talked about earlier.
Yeah. So let's say I'm a recruit right now and I'm going through that same type of thing. And you talked about it with pro where didn't feel like it was going to work out. And all of a sudden you changed your mindset and wow, things started working for me. Clearly the recruiting process is a lot longer than that pro trying to find a contract. You're talking about a few weeks versus the recruiting process. You're talking a few months, maybe even a year plus. You know, if I'm an athlete who's going through that right now and I'm seeing the clicks on my video, but I'm not getting a lot of interaction, what was your mindset about that? Were you trying to just knock down the doors of every school, or were you just, like you said, the ones that were communicating with you, you were super fired up about, so you were just all in on them? If I'm in that situation right now and I feel like, man, I wish this process was, you know, a little bit bigger, there were more options or whatever, how can I deal in that situation? And how did you find yourself dealing in that situation?
I cried a lot of tears during my recruiting process. And so like looking back now, just like what I said earlier, I wish I could tell that version of myself, like somebody's going to give you a chance and it's going to be the best experience of your life. And just whatever happens is going to happen and it's meant to be that way. But you know, I think I was 15, 16, I think. And like, whenever you get any no, it's like the world is tumbling down and it's just like, I'm never going to find a place. And it goes like extreme worst case scenario. So my advice in the recruiting world right now for players is cast a wide net and like understand and understand yourself and like know your value that you have, even if people do tell you no, because where you end up is exactly where you're supposed to. And for some reason, if it isn't, you will find the right place later on.
Yeah. That's good advice. And when you said like know your value, it's like the no's. Talk to me a little bit on the perspective, because now as an older player who's a professional now, you talked about the no's were just so like, oh my gosh, this is such a reflection on me. And I think as I've gotten older, it's like no means no from them. Like it's got more to do with them than it does for me. But talk me through like just, I can tell you've got just clarity on those no's, but at the time, they're just so... they're so crushing. It's just like, oh my gosh, no. And what does this define about me? So talk to me a little bit about the evolution of what the word no has started to mean to you.
Oh yeah. I mean, you grow like, and you learn these things like as you age, of course, but like, I wish I would have thought about that at that age. And obviously like I had an amazing support system, like my parents, my family, everybody, but it's still so like detrimental, especially as you're growing up, still like figuring yourself out. Basically those no's like can just hit to your core. And so like my advice would be like feel that, but then still understand like that value you have and like who you are. And that, just like you said, I love the quote you just said, like that's a no from them. That's not like a no that I'm telling myself. That's yeah. Just them at this moment saying, like, I'm sorry.
It just takes a while to figure that out, though, you know?
It's yeah, like, for sure.
Like you said, you know, when you were talking about just changing your mindset, and when you start to just focus somewhat more inward, you start to realize that stuff from the outside world is more reflected on them than it is on you. That's really cool. So, all right, as a juniors player, and I'm going to start to actually lump, you know, I want to break down juniors and then your experience at Rice, but for right now, I'm going to lump them together, and I'm going to hit you with some stats you might not know. I had to do some math. This is my math homework. I couldn't get into Rice, but I can do a little bit of math with my phone. So high school record, got this from Rice's website. I've got you at 146-17. That's what I say your high school record is. Your senior year was 31-5. That's like a million. I can't believe you played that many matches. So what was, if I could just break down the high school side right there, with all those wins, I just had the record. There had to have been some state titles or some great runs and some conference titles. What were the accolades in high school and the accomplishments there? Because I just saw the record, but 146-17, there's got to be quite a few championships in there.
Never a championship.
Get out of here.
I know. We got... So my sophomore and junior year, I got like third place for everything for 2 years. I got third at nationals, third at state, third at nationals, third at state. Jeez. So it was like kind of a running joke in our family that like, it was just, they kind of made fun of me for it. But yeah, so high school was super awesome. We had an awesome coach, awesome teammates. I think it's junior year, we went 48-0 and then we lost in the state semis. We lost in the semis. So we never made it to, we never got a title, never had a championship, but it was a super fun time.
Well, I can empathize with that experience too. 2 years ago, we went undefeated in the regular season, and then we actually lost in the semis as well. You know, and I still am trying to learn from that and grow from that as a coach and just from a mindset standpoint. You know, what was one of the things in your guys' experience? Because I know for us, the pressure was building, but it wasn't. And I feel like we dealt with it the way that we needed to. It was like we didn't overblow this undefeated thing, but then that's clearly in your mind. And then the media, of course, wants to play that up. You know, I think there's a lot of coaches that'll listen to this too. So a lot of times I think you'll talk to the players. But right now, talk to the coaches. When you were in that position, you were on an undefeated team and you're going through the tournament. Everybody knows you're undefeated. Everybody's talking about it. You know, what's a great messaging? Put on your coach's hat right now. You're talking to the team. You're talking about the messaging moving into that tournament run. What is it? What does a team need to hear when they've got this great thing going and they just need to get over the hump and finish it?
I think like we just really never talked about it, like really ever. Like we would, you know, be like, what the heck is happening? Like sometimes.
We did too.
Yeah. We're like, it's just weird. And then, like, but we never really talked about it as a team. And like, our coach was always just like, all right, this is our next game. This is our scout. That's it. Like, we were just looking forward to like the next opponent and not looking backwards really at all of like the record or whatever.
Yeah. just keeping not short-sighted, but just like the small tasks, you know?
Yeah. And so, then you reflect on it afterwards and you're like, okay, that was cool.
That was pretty sweet. Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree with you. I think in the moment it's like, you know, in the back of your head it's happening, but it's like, you're too caught up in the task at hand to really like, yeah, whoa, that was cool. And I look back on our season like that too. And I'm like, what? Like, you look at the whole of it and you go, we really did that? Like, that's wild. Cool. All right. So that's high school. And like I said, I'm going to lump a little bit of Rice and high school together because I want a little bit of a general overview and then we'll get to your Rice years. But your combined record with high school, I don't have club because in club we play a million matches. I don't have your club record, but I do have your high school and I do have your Rice record. 260-44 over 9 years because you had five at Rice. So in Rice, you went 27-4 last year, 20-7, 16-5 in the COVID year. And then in 19 and 18, you were splitting time in a 6-2, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so those years you went 27-4, 24-7. So never a double-digit loss season. And like I said, 86% win percentage, 260-44 over 9 years. How old are you right now?
22.
You're 22, so 9 years. That's almost half of your life, 86% win percentage. There's some people that would like kill to be over 500. I mean, for all those wins that you had, there's a team that lost on the other side of that. So I just look at all those wins and all of that. You talked about just like the small goals or just focusing on the task at hand. But when you hear that number of matches that you've played, and again, this doesn't include club. So we're talking over 300 matches, 260 of them being wins. You know, just from hearing all that, and I'm going over 9 years, you have to pick one match that sticks out in that 300 plus. What's that match?
It would have to be playing Texas during the COVID year at Texas.
Tell me about that match.
Yeah, it was in their big, I forget what it's called, but their big like basketball arena because of the COVID policies. And that was a game our families could come to. So my parents were there because they weren't allowed to come to a lot of, I don't think they were allowed to come at home games or a lot of other ones. But we had just lost to Baylor at home like the week prior. And we kind of needed like a big win to kind of make sure we could get in this bubble place for NCAA appearance, like to get into the tournament. And so we kind of knew that a little bit. And like this was kind of our last shot, I think, at that. And we had lost the first set 25-9. And we all were like, because we had beaten them at home the year prior or something. And we were like anticipating they were going to like come in, you know, really going after it. For that reason, and they beat us 25-9, and we're all sitting in after that set, and we're like, all right, that just happened, like we're gonna have to move on. And like we just turned it around, and it was like a really competitive match after that. It kind of just went like flopped back and forth, and the fifth set was like I blacked out, like I don't remember anything like really at all except seeing the celebration video. Like, I completely kind of blacked out. It was like one of those games where it was just so fun.
That's crazy. Yeah, I love the celebration. I'm glad that we have all those opportunities to get video because, like you said, you're caught up in the moment and you look back at it and it's like, it can bring you back. You can actually like process it. So, of all those 300 matches on the road, you talked about it being at Texas. I've played a couple matches there throughout my career. I haven't ever played there. I don't have a men's team, but I've coached in some matches in Austin. They have that building that looks like an owl. And we're coming from Louisville, and everybody's like, there's this building in Austin that looks like an owl, and apparently it was made by some Rice alumni. Is this like a random, is this a true thing? Somebody who's from Texas, do you know the story?
Oh, I have no idea this story, but that sounds cool.
All right, well, I'm going to phone a friend later and see if I can get the actual story on that. But every time we go down there, there's this building that if you go, and again, I don't know Austin, I don't know Texas very well at all, but you drive through Austin, and when you hit this building, the four corners of it, when you see it from the corner, it looks like an owl at the top. And every time I'm down there, I always tell the athletes, every time I'm down there, I'm like, let me tell you a story about that building. But I'm not sure that that's like the true. I want to make sure. I want to know the actual story behind that. I heard it's a Rice alum that was kind of playing a prank on Austin by putting that building that looks like an owl for a Rice owl.
Yeah.
So let's get to your Rice years real quick here. A few accolades. So 3-time All-Conference USA, 3-time Setter of the Year, which I believe the only time in the conference history that that's ever happened. 3 times in a row, Setter of the Year. And assist record for you, 64 against Western Kentucky, I believe in the Conference USA match. Honorable mention All-American. I actually had to go back and look at who all the All-Americans were, because I thought you were like a first teamer in my head. I mean, when I watch you play, and if this podcast has an All-American, you're an unofficial first team All-American on the podcast. So you have that accolade there. But I looked at all the setters, and I think setters is such a hard position because it's not like I had this hitting percentage, I had this number of kills. Setters is so subjective. So yeah, I think everybody would agree, one of, if not the top setter in the country, especially your last year. I just want to talk really quick and then get more specific on your experience at Rice. But you talked about, you know, splitting time in a 6-2 your first 2 years. And then right after that, you're a 3-time setter of the year in the conference. So when I look at that from a coach's lens, I go, you probably were ready to set in a 5-1 before that. You don't go from just kind of playing half the time to all of a sudden you're the best setter in the conference. Maybe you do. But how does an athlete go through, I would think, for how successful you were as an athlete, that you always knew, hey, I can do this. So how do you go through those first 2 years where maybe you aren't running the show, you're not in the 5-1, you're waiting your turn? And I think that's hard on athletes. And then all of a sudden, okay, your first 3 years, you're not kind of easing into it. All of a sudden, boom, you're the best setter in the conference. So what is that first couple of years like when you're splitting time? Some people would say paying your dues. But I would assume that there would be some challenges involved with that. What were some tools you used or some lessons you learned? You know, you weren't sitting. You were in a 6-2, but you weren't running the show for your first 2 years. And then you have these amazing last 3 years. Talk me through those first 2 years when you're getting your foot in the door.
Yeah. Those first 2 years, they were challenging for sure. And I had to practice patience a lot. But like, we were so successful. We went to the NCAA tournament for the first time in I don't know how many years, but you know, we had like great records. We were winning games. We won CUSA my freshman year. And
is that what you guys call Conference USA, CUSA? I've never heard that.
CUSA.
That's awesome. I will never call it Conference USA ever again.
Yeah. CUSA. Yeah. So we were like successful. And so like, you know, I had amazing teammates. I had amazing coaches. Like, we were all doing this awesome thing together and it was working. And so I think had it not, like, it would have been much more of like a struggle, like mentally. I remember, like, I would always be like waiting. I was like always ready to sprint to sub back in. Like, I was always ready. I was really wanted to get back in there.
Did you ever sub in early? I've seen subs do that who are too anxious. You never pulled that one? Okay.
No, never pulled that one.
Or did you do the thing when like you would forget to sub out? Like, oh, I thought I was going around this time.
Yeah. Yeah. No. I was just always super ready though.
I feel like I see that more with middles. Like, they'll run back to serve even though they haven't served all year. And then it's like, no, you're going to, like, either the libero's going to serve for you or we're going to sub a serving sub. And the middles always run back there. And then they got to give the ball back and they got to sub out. I kind of like it, though, to be honest.
I know. Yeah, I do too.
You know, as we're talking about Rice, I think one of the coolest things is, like, people that were there. And so I've seen you on Volumetrics. I've studied you on Volumetrics. But there's no nuances. I can't see your facial expressions. I don't know your communication. And so first time we've done this in podcast history, we're going to have a guest host here, a really good friend of mine. He was a teammate of mine in college. He's an assistant coach for you. We're going to bring John Klanik on here. And I want to get some insight into what it was like to coach you in person. So, John, I want to bring you on. First time we got a phone in guest podcast host, John Klanik.
Dan, thanks for having me. Long-time listener, first-time caller, so I appreciate you having me on the pod. Love what you're doing for the sport, so we appreciate you. So I've had the privilege to coach Carly Graham for her 5 years. She actually came in when I accepted the job at Rice in 2018. Met Carly that summer going into volleyball camps, but was able to grow with Carly throughout her career. And I would say a lot of the coaching that I do now is built upon that class that came in that year, because I kind of grew with them as they went throughout, right? So super grateful for Carly in that class and those who kind of set the tone for Rice culture and the foundation that was built. So Carly, I kind of want to dig a little bit deeper. Obviously, we've been through a lot, and kind of want to go through some of your games and some of your mentality going into those games. So first thing I want to touch on is you talked about in that Texas game, going into game five at Texas, kind of being like blacked out in that set five. Okay. So that's not the first time that's happened. So I think it'd be great for the kind of the listeners to kind of talk about that situation, and how you kind of control your emotions, because you're a competitor. Like, everybody knows that, the whole country kind of has seen that throughout your career. And very talented, but the leadership and the drive that you have brought, I think, is most noticeable as well. And sometimes, like I said, you have those moments of adrenaline takes over, or you're cool, calm, and collected. So kind of talk to us about how you handle that. How have you grown from that, your mentality going into big match situations?
Yeah, I think like going into big matches, like we talked about a little bit of like, you know, the importance behind these matches. And I think sometimes I would catch myself even after the match, like say we played like this past year when we played Baylor at home, like I remember my mentality going into that match was like, we have to get this one. We have to get this one. And like that kind of put like unnecessary pressure, like, in needed that I put on myself. Like I was like, we have to get this. So this, you know, rather than like after that, and after like reflecting back on like that mentality, it's like, we don't have to do anything. We get to compete against this team. That's awesome. And it's going to be a great game. So kind of switching that mentality of like these big pressure matches, of like, not, we have to get this win or we have to perform this way. Like, we're getting to do these things is like a big shift, especially in like big time pressure sort of matches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree 100%. I mean, it sounds a little cliche, but like the game never changes, right? I mean, it's one of those things where whether you're in the practice gym or you're on the game court, like the atmosphere is a little bit different, but the game stays the same. So branching off of that, you kind of touched on the game at Texas in 2020, the COVID year. I want to go a year back, 2019, Texas at home. And to give people some context on that game, that was the game that kind of put us a little bit more on the map. Texas at home, I think they were ranked 3 in the country. Coming in, we broke the attendance record for Tudor Fieldhouse, where we play our volleyball matches. Huge match. First time Texas has been in Houston in a while. We get up 2-0. We get smacked the next two sets. We go game five, deciding game there. So kind of touch on that game, because that's one of those high energy, high pressure situations, as you said, that kind of can dictate emotion. Talk about what you were feeling, the energy going into that match, energy through the match. Obviously, it's kind of opposite sides, because we won the first two sets, so we were kind of riding high, and then those next two sets, we kind of dropped the ball a little bit, and we were kind of on the opposite end, and then game five. So talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, so I remember after those first two sets, we went back in our little hallway where we meet after the second set, and we were all like not speaking, and we were just looking around at each other like, what is going on? But we were super excited, and then we're like, let's freaking do it. Like, we just need one more set. And then I think once we knew like we only need one more set, we kind of had this more like lax feeling, not like let's go after it, because we were ahead, you know. And so then we get smacked the next two sets, like you said. And then it's like, all right, now we got 15 points. It's short. Like, we got to get after it. And it's honestly kind of hard, like, because that was another kind of blackout moment. But I do remember it was like point. And I think it was like 12-12, or we might have been up 12-13. And I I sprinted back to sub back in because I was ready to go. And I had the ball. And I think this is when I started like my one breath routine on my serve, because I grabbed the ball and I was like shaking. And I looked over at Jenny and I was like shaking to see the zone. And I was holding the ball in my hand and I was like, okay. And then I took a deep breath and like released it and I stopped shaking. And then I served probably a patty cake serve. And I think we either won or lost that point. And then we were up 14-13 and it was rotation one. And I like set Nicole, I think Nicole was like going off that match or something. And we like freaking won. And it was just like, well, what is going on? It was crazy. Yeah. And then the student section, everybody stormed the court. So it was like super surreal moment.
So going to that game five, 14-13, you're right, because I was going to say the exact same thing. Rotation one, Nicole Lennon was on the rights. Was there ever any – did you ever think about who you were going to set at that time? I know the pass took you a little bit that direction, and so you naturally you had to put it up to her. But were you like, Nicole, you're getting this ball, or was it going to be best option at the time?
Nicole, you're getting this ball.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think – I mean, every game, you know, it depends who's the hot hitter at that moment in the game. And at that moment, I can't remember exactly, but I believe that was it. That was the only option.
I've got to chime in here. I've got to. Is that something? Did you say that to her before the serve? You tell her you're getting this ball, or that was in your head?
In my head.
Okay. Do you ever do that with hitters? I always wonder if like great setters, because I've had some that maybe did, you know, whatever. But I used to have setters that would tell me that and then they wouldn't set me the ball. I think they just wanted me to drive hard. Do setters do that?
Yeah. I think it just depends on the situation. Like if somebody maybe makes an error or something, I'll be like, I'm getting you the next ball. But like if in a super pressure filled moment, I don't think I would say something. Like, I just give him the ball.
Gotcha. I was just curious when you guys described that, if you told her that. But no, in your head, you're like, she's getting this ball.
Oh, yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah, that was plan A.
Love it. Sorry, I had to chime in. I was, like, so enthralled with that story. Take it away, Johnny.
Okay, so, again, I kind of want to touch on the Texas match. A couple more things. So, in that match, 3-4 kind of woke up the sleeping giant there a little bit. For the match, they hit 274. We hit 174. So, what do you think was the difference in a match like that? That can obviously a lot of teams focus on hitting percentage, kill percentage, got to score points. By looking at the numbers, you don't really see that in that match. So what do you think was the difference in a match like that?
I think the digs. I don't know what our digs were for that match or compared to their digs, but Tabitha, she absolutely went insane digging balls. Like, it was absolutely insane. And so, you know, playing against teams, especially like huge hitter teams that, you know, get set, put the ball away, like that's, you know, it's usually quick points. I think that could be something that's maybe new, but I just remember like we were digging balls and like transitioning, trying to find a way to score. And if we didn't, we were digging balls again. So I think that was the biggest difference.
Got it. I want to bounce back the week prior to the Texas match. Again, kind of a deep dive. The week before we played Stephen F. Austin, and we lost to them in five. Talk about, if you can remember, that week of practice, because those, again, kind of polar opposites of who you're playing there. Talk about a loss like that, what goes into the mindset, the prep work going into that week of practice to get ready for a team, a number three team in the country.
Yeah. I remember that bus ride back. That was a sad bus ride back after that loss. But I remember practice the next few days, because I think we had a quick turnaround. We played Texas on a Wednesday or something. Mm-hmm. And I remember those 2 days of practice, we were like, we're getting after it. Like, this is our next opponent. What just happened? We obviously did not want to happen, but this is our next opponent. And we're getting after it so we can compete against this team. And I specifically remember, like, there was a switch of, like, we changed our offense a little bit. We went a little faster than what we had been going previously in the year. And, like, we stuck with that after that. So it was like, we got after it. Like it was almost a little wake up call, maybe.
How do you handle those short memory moments? Do you anything like you said, podcasts? Do you train your mind in any certain way? It's because like that's a tough loss, and then to bounce back and have to play a really good team in a short window there. What's the thinking behind that for you? Or you could be like me, where I have no short memory. I'm angry then. I'm angry then.
Yeah. So I don't remember who said this advice. I actually think it was Stacey Sikora. I listened to her speak one time, and she was like, I think it was her. She was like, she would like set a time period. She'd be like, 15 minutes or something, and then you have to move on, like be really mad for 15 minutes. I'm like, okay, maybe I'll do a night. Like I need a little more time than 15 minutes. But I think in college you have such little time, like you're kind of moving a lot. So like, it's like, okay, next thing, like I got to go to class, or I got to go to practice, I got to go to lift, I got to get treatment. I would say I hadn't really done that much like mindset stuff in college, because it felt like everything was just so fast paced. I didn't have that much time. But since like playing professionally, like I had so much more time, where I had like more time to think and stuff like that. So like journaling, like I love journaling now. I picked that up since I've been over there. Journaling, going on walks, podcasts, like all that stuff, I think is really helpful for me.
Cool. Now I kind of want to touch on, so that was pretty early. That was early on in your career. Let's talk about this past season. Tough schedule last season in Coosa. We have to go to Western Kentucky, big Rice rival, both top 25 programs. We go to Western Kentucky for the last match of the regular season. Western Kentucky is also hosting the conference tournament. So we are in Western Kentucky. We're going to play. We have to travel back home. We'll leave again on Wednesday to go right back to Bowling Green and play that, go through the conference tournament, but play them. We go in the regular season. We lose. We drop that match in 5, 17-15 in game 5. Again, tough one to swallow. Have to travel back knowing we're going to go back to Bowling Green. We go into Bowling Green again, and we beat them in 5. Kind of just flip the scores a little bit. Talk about that point 17 that they score in game 5, that travel home, the mindset, the training going in and the prep work going into that week to get ready for the conference tournament in order to shift gears like that.
Yeah, I think we were all just so mad. Like we were all sitting there in that locker room, and I remember being like, okay, in 1 week, not looking ahead or anything before we play our first opponents, but like we knew we had other opponents. That's the next task at hand. But I remember sitting there and being like, we're going to be back here in the same exact locker room in 1 week, and we're either going to feel exactly like this or we're going to feel on top of the world. And I was like, everybody was just so like mad, because it that same story had been written 2 or 3 times. We had lost in 5 by 2 points, like, and so we were just like, I just remember the feeling was like anger, and everybody felt it rather than like upset. It was like pure anger. So we travel back, and like I feel like we got after it in practice. Like we knew what we wanted, like, and we were getting after it to try and go get that. And so going into that championship match against them, like we started, I think it could be kind of a similar story of like, we got to get this, we got to get this. And so that first set was like almost a wake up call. And it's like, all right, like, let's just compete, you know? And then we turned it around. We flipped the switch, rather of like, you know, we have to do this. We have to beat them. Like, we don't want to feel this way, because I think that can get in a little sticky territory sometimes, where that can like make somebody play not themselves. And I know I felt that sometimes, like it would affect decision-making or setting. I would get in my head a little bit of like, we have to do this, we have to do this. But it's just like, we're competing, playing this game. Like, this is fun. Let's compete against this team on the other side. But I don't remember exactly. It's hard for me to remember because I truly kind of black out in like these matches. But I think we lost the first set pretty handily. At least we came back a little bit. So we got a little momentum going into the second set. We win the second set, lose the third. I don't know at the point we subbed in Lola Ford. What set was that? Do you know, John?
That was in set four, I believe.
Set four. Okay. So, Dan, Lola Ford is a left-hand right side on our team. And so she got subbed in the fourth set, and I set her the ball, kill, again, kill. Like, it was just like, it was working. And so I think I set her quite a few times, but she was like the hot hitter in that moment. And we were in the fourth set, and they had match point. And I set Lola Ford. Like, that was the option. That was plan A, because she was a hot hitter at that moment. And I set her, and she hits the ball out of bounds. And their whole team storms the court, do a dog pile. And then the ref blows in the net, and we were like, oh, my gosh. So it was like, it was so much adrenaline, the whole gym, like both sides. It was so intense. And then we end up winning that fourth set to take it to a fifth. And so then it's like the same thing as the Texas games, or anytime you go to five, it's like, okay, nothing matters. We just have to go to 15 points. It's a quick game. And we did it. And it was, I think it was point for point a lot of the time. And then when we double subbed a blocking sub, and they hit it out of bounds, I think. And like, it was another blackout moment. Like, everybody came together, and it was like so exciting. And then also like this like relief feeling, like we did it, we freaking did it. And then we were sitting in the locker room, and it was like a deja vu, but the vibes, and like everybody was so insanely happy, rather than the week prior, it was complete different script. So it was super awesome. And it was kind of like a storybook, like way to go out of Coosa too. So it was super cool.
You talked about that fourth set. I have to pop in here, Johnny. You talked about that fourth set, and it brought me right back to what you were talking about, where like life happens for you and not to you. Cause you lost the match.
We legit lost the match.
You had nothing to do with the fact that whoever was in the net was in the net. We had the same thing happen. We played Oregon in the fourth set. They hit a ball 1 centimeter over our block. And it's like, if that hit is a little bit lower, it's an automatic kill. There's nothing we can do. It just happened to go our way. And it's that mindset of like, things are happening for you. You're out of control in those moments, but you're in control of how you're approaching those moments. And when you described that, it was just like, that happened for a reason, you know? So that was awesome. Very, very cool stuff. Keep going, Johnny.
Yeah, absolutely. That game four with the net call, I mean, we won that set 28-26, and that net call was 22 plus points. Like, that wasn't early on. It wasn't, you know, if that happens or they aren't in the net, then Rice loses in four and we're not even talking about it. So I tell two stories, I guess. Carl, the last thing I want to ask you, my final question is kind of now where you're at, accomplished high school, club, college career, now professional athlete. Biggest piece of advice you would give your younger self after everything you've accomplished in your story, what would you tell a younger you?
We kind of touched on it a little bit of like knowing yourself and like your value rather than any outside noise at all. And yourself, your value, and like the people that you're surrounded by, like that's what truly matters. The outside noise, it's truly just noise. So like, if you're not a highly recruited player, if you're not getting, you know, accolades or whatever it is, maybe you're not playing right now, maybe, you know, whatever it is that's going on, reflect back on like your value and understand like what you bring to the table, and that outside noise is exactly what it is just noise. And so I think I would tell my younger self that a million times over, because I feel like I got wrapped up. Like I shed a lot of tears from recruiting, from, you know, all these no's. I mean, I did it 3 months ago, getting no's, you know, from people. So, you know, stuff is going to happen, you know, but feeling those things when they happen and then having the reflection back of like, here's like the truth, like, this is who I am. This is what I bring. And if this person does not see this right now, then that's fine.
Beautifully said.
Love that. I got one thing here for each of you guys. So Johnny, I'm going to start with you. You know, I think about a player, Claire Chasse, for us, was somebody that she didn't play a lot her first couple of years, and then she ended up being an All-American. Carly, similar to your story, where you're splitting time in a 6-2, and then all of a sudden you're in the lineup, and you're the setter of the year in the conference, you're an All-American. Johnny, for you as a coach, I remember the match with Claire where I said, oh my gosh, Claire, she is it. She can do it. But I didn't know till that moment. You know, she was backing up an outside who got hurt. She was thrown into a match against Miami. She goes off for 17 kills after hardly ever playing. And it's like, wow, this player can do it. I never knew it before that moment. Does that moment stick out for you with Carly? What's the moment in practice, the moment in a game where you were like, this player is special?
I think Carly's transition from being in the 6-2, like, you for sure saw glimpses of it. And then that next summer going into Carly kind of taking the reins of the offense was probably the most memorable. I don't know if I have a match, but you can see, I feel like in a lot of situations for athletes, it's very easy to be like, okay, I'm put into this role. I'm waiting to get yanked. And Carly was the opposite of somebody who took it head on and embraced it and made it her own. And I think once you kind of have that checked, that mentality check, like, this is mine, then you saw the free play that Carly was doing. And, you know, I've always told other coaches and people in the country that you could put Carly on any other team in the country and she makes them that much better. And you start to see glimpses in that summer, and then especially in that preseason, again, with the Texas match, kind of really put us on the map. We had a few, you know, we had Ole Miss early on. UCF was a pretty solid team. We took care of business early on that year. But just some of the things that Carly started to do with the ball, getting hands on balls that were probably at, you know, 25 feet and making a high ball set to the outside. Carly was famous for going up to, like, she was going to attack and dishing it to Anita on one ball. And, you know, when you have a middle that's touching 10-6 and can thump a ball at the 8-foot line, people notice that. And those are the plays you remember. So that was, you know, that preseason was when Carly made the role her own and kind of separated herself from just other setters. In my mind, I'm a little bit biased of other setters in the country then, for sure.
Love that. Carly, John describes that play where you are like gonna swing and then you set a hitter. Blockers cannot resist. Why does that play continue to work? Do you just laugh at blockers? Like, it happens with everybody. It's like, oh, look, like, the only time a setter is not gonna dump is when they look like they're gonna dump. Why do blockers keep jumping on that?
I don't know. Me and John would joke about that in practice too, because a lot of times he would be on the other side. And so he would always be chirping through the net, like, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. He would chirp all the time in practice. But I don't know. Like, I think you have to throw in one every once in a while, even if it doesn't score, just to, like, an actual swing, just to, like, keep it a little honest. But, yeah, there was, like, I don't know. I think it's just funky and weird. That
blockers can't, you know, resist. That's all I know. They cannot resist. It's like staring at the sun. All right.
There's a few times, you know, there's not many moments in volleyball where you have, I always compare it to basketball when somebody crosses you over and defender has like wobbly ankles and they fall over. You pan the crowd and you have, you see everybody's reaction, like, oh, like, that guy just got juked out of his shoes. Very little does that happen in volleyball. And there's been certain plays, and One play specifically comes to mind against Baylor. I think it was this past year. We didn't win the match, but I watched it on Volumetrics all the time. Same exact play. Carly goes up like she's going to jump. Left front, middle front, both jump with her. She sidesets the ball to Anita, and Anita, you know, again, puts this ball at like 5 feet. And then it's good just to kind of pause and see people's reaction. Like, did that just happen? If I can find the clip, I'll send it to you. Maybe you can add it. But it's stuff like that that makes Carly exciting and makes the sport exciting.
I love it. That's great. But Carly, last word from you. You're a health sciences major. You just finished up your first year of pro. Where do you see yourself in a year? Where do you see yourself in 5 years?
Hopefully the same answer to both. I want to play as long as, you know, the wheels keep turning. Like, I just want to play as long as possible. And then once I'm done from that, I want to be a college coach.
You want to be a college coach. So here you go. You're putting it out in the world. I'm sure some people will be hitting you up after they listen to this. So I'm excited to see what you do, both with the professional career, and then when the time does come, you want to get into coaching. I'm excited to see where you end up there as well. So thanks for taking the time today on the podcast. Johnny, Carly, we appreciate you guys. Thanks again.
Thank you so much. This was super fun.
Thanks for listening to Out of Rotation with your host, Dan Meske, presented by the American Volleyball Network. Until next time, come on, don't give them any free points. Always stay in rotation.